Dealing with the coronavirus is our topic, and our guest right now is Bill Federer. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And Bill, welcome back to the program. It's great to have you on again.
Well, Jerry, great to be with you.
All right. Now, before we get into specifics about the coronavirus, just let me say this. A professor of pathology at the University of California, San Diego, wrote down just a few common sense points, and I want to offer these as a public service. One, no handshaking. Use a fist bump, slight bow, elbow bump, etc. By the way, we did that at church the other day. It was fun. Two, use only your knuckle to touch light switches, elevator buttons, etc. Lift the gasoline dispenser with a papal towel or use a disposable glove. Three, open doors with your closed fist or hip. Five, wash your hands with soap for 10 to 20 seconds. If you have a hand sanitizer, try and get some that have 60% or greater. And finally, keep a bottle of sanitizer available at each of your home's entrances. Okay, so these are a few common sense tips, but let's get to it. This is something which I'm afraid to say is being politicized, which is terrible because then misinformation can be spread. And the bottom line is, we need to do the best we can to keep as many people safe from this as we can and not overblow it and not underestimate it either. Your sir. Your time, sir.
Yes. Well, the CDC says that 12 to 60,000 people a year die of some kind of flu and that this is significantly below that amount. So this is, again, as you mentioned, getting quite a bit of press. But as far as an actual epidemic, the Center for Disease Control does not consider it such because every year people get flu and it does hit the elderly population more than the rest. And then there is a interesting examination of the fact that almost every election year, there is some flu that seems to get a lot of attention. And you have the, going back to 2004, there's the different Ebola and then the Zika and then the avian flu and the bird flu and the swine flu. And then this year, the coronavirus. So the one thing that is sort of a disconnected thought, but possibly could be brought in, which could be the reason for it getting so much attention, is that whenever there is a financial collapse, so to speak, whatever president is in office when that happens is voted out. So it's a pretty standard comparison that if the economy is doing really bad, that whatever president happens to be in when the economy is doing bad, that he will get voted out. So one thought is that maybe the panic that is being experienced may be partly due for the intentional purpose of interrupting the economy, so that it could cause there to be financial difficulties. But one of the things that I've done is I've studied different times in the past when there were attacks of different diseases, and it's quite an interesting study. You know, there was a smallpox plague in London that was so bad that Isaac Newton, I guess you could call it self-quarantine, but he left and went out to live in an estate in the countryside to escape the plague. And that is when he saw the apple fall from the tree and he came up with his theory or his understanding of gravity. We also had the bubonic plague of the Middle Ages, where 75 million people died. And they thought it was spread through rats, and they thought it came back from the Holy Land. And so you had the Crusaders going over to the Holy Land, and that somehow or another they were brought back to Europe, and it spread. It was a very big deal. I trace the history of hospitals, and it was during the bubonic plague that you had some, now this is before the Reformation, so you only had one church, but a group of Catholic men, they were called Election Brothers. They would collect the dead bodies and give them a Christian burial because nobody wanted to touch them. And then they would also, if somebody was in the process of dying, they would more or less have hospice care until they died. And their motivation was to help this person to get their soul right with God before they died. And then you have the different hospitals that were staffed by nuns. And so you had the Hotel Dieu. And
that's in Paris.
The Hotel Dieu. Right. So
it's not only in Paris, it's right next to the Notre Dame, right next to it.
Yes. And the Hotel Dieu is quite interesting because it is staffed by nuns, and it began in the 600s.
Yeah. It's supposed to be the world's oldest still operating hospital.
Yes. And so people would go on pilgrimages to the Holy Land. And they would arrive worn out, obviously traveling hundreds of miles. And they decided that every cathedral where people were making pilgrimage to would also have an infirmary, a medical clinic, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And the most of the care was convalescent care. It was not, you know, the medical science that we know today, but it was care. And then you would have the Islamic raiders attacking them, so you would have to have knights that would defend these places, and so they were called knights of hospitaller. And you think hospitaller, hospital, what's that? Hosp is the Latin word for traveler, and since they would travel long distances, the hospital would be the place where the travelers would recuperate. And so that word hosp is also the root word for hospitality. It's also the root word for hotel and the root word for Hotel Dieu. So it's be the house of God or the place of the travelers to meet God. And so that's this Hotel Dieu in Paris. These sisters of St. Joseph and the Sisters of Charity and the Sisters of all those different orders, they built hundreds of hospitals all across Europe, and when there were wars, the armies didn't have medical staff. The bodies of the wounded would just sort of be lying in the field, and so it was these nuns that would go out in the field and collect the bodies.
Yeah,
and so they would do it for free. They did it unto Christ, and Florence Nightingale, who was the English woman there at the Battle of Crimea, when the British were fighting.
Okay, now you're jumping forward to the 1800s, whereas before you were talking about during the Middle Ages, but go on.
Yes, thank you for helping me with the timeline. But the so Florence Nightingale said there's no training as good as that of a Catholic nun. And so this was, matter of fact, the nun's hats came, influenced the nurse's hat, that sort of unique little cap that nurses would wear, and that came. And so you see that you had the first hospital west of the Mississippi was founded by the Sisters of St. Joseph and so forth. Ben Franklin started the first hospital in America, and he dedicated it to Christ. And then you had a Presbyterian hospital was the second oldest hospital in America. And you had the Jews then started a hospital. The second oldest hospital in America was New York's Presbyterian Hospital, founded in 1771 by Samuel Baird, B-A-R-D, mm-hmm. who was a personal physician to George Washington.
Wow.
But these nuns, the hospitals they started included the Mayo Clinic and St. Vincent's de Paul's, and there was one Catholic that signed the Declaration, Charles Carroll, and so
of Maryland.
He built a home for his son, and that home eventually became John Hopkins University.
Oh, wow.
And so there's quite a history. But the one thing that we can sort of generalize is it was Christians responding to the healthcare crises. It was not the government. And I point out that God gives commands to five groups, to individuals, to families, to employer employees, to churches and governments. There are commands for individuals to take care of the poor, visit the sick, you know, tend to the Good Samaritan. There's no command for the family to take care of the poor. The commands to the family are husbands, love your wives, you know, children, submit to your parents. There's no command for employers and employees.
Well, wait. There is a command, though, for families to take care of each other, at least. For example, if a man will not take care of his own household, you know, he's worse than an unbeliever. He's denied the faith. It says that in 1 Timothy 5. Not if a man cannot provide for his household, but if a man refuses to do that.
Right, but it's within the family.
Right.
There's no command for them to take care of the poor, take care of strangers. There are commands for the church to do that, and historically the church has. And historically the church has started almost all the hospitals and the medical clinics and orphanages and schools. And you've written about this extensively, you know, on What If Jesus Never Been Born, those tremendous books. But there's no command for the government to take care of the poor. The command of the government is the shortest. Protect the innocent, punish the guilty. What's happened is over time, the government has been usurping the church's role. And so we say, oh, we need to take care of the poor. Government, do it. No, whenever the government does anything, it's run by bureaucrats and politicians that want to keep their jobs. And so they're going to try to, there's a quote from Booker T. Washington when he's talking about, there are some race problem solvers that don't want the patient to get well. As long as the problem persists,
Wow. They
have a job, you know, making, money off these grievances. And so the government doing anything, but when the church does it, the church does it for free because they're doing it as unto Christ. They do it with a message of, we want to help you to improve your life and get to the place where you don't need the help. And then out of your generosity, you'll give back to whatever ministry and order.
Okay. So at this point, we have 2 minutes left in this discussion. And I want to ask you, what can the church then, and respond? How can we respond to the coronavirus crisis that we're in right now? 2 minutes.
Well, during the Revolutionary War, there was a smallpox crisis. And matter of fact, more soldiers died of smallpox than died in battle. And we had prayer. And then 1849, a cholera epidemic sweeps the country. It came from not China, but India. The British had colonized it and put in Steve Bones and railroads, and people bathed in the sewage-filled Ganges River, and this cholera spread, killed millions across Europe, and came to America, killed 150,000 Americans. And so our president, Zachary Taylor, declares a national day of fasting and prayer. And you read it. I put it in my books.
Miracles.
That when you call on the miracles in American history, that the nation realized that we have to turn back to the Lord. And that when problems come, that repentance is an individual thing. And so at the beginning of August, 1849, is when they had this day of fasting and prayer. By the end of August, the death rates dropped off.
1 minute left.
And the cholera epidemic ended. So we do care for the poor. We do take health care precautions. You don't tempt the Lord by, doing stuff you shouldn't. But we have to realize that we are a nation that has a relationship with God. And historically, when things were bad, they would have days of prayer. When things were real bad, they would have days of fasting and prayer. And when things turned around, they would have days of thanksgiving. And so here we are today. We have this crisis. We need to pray and seek the Lord and respond as the different Christians had in the past, through individually and through the church, to minister to those that were ill and less advantaged.
Okay, Bill Federer, thank you so much for being with us. You know, it's funny, the very things that Mike Pence is actually doing is what you're advocating, and then I've seen these secular-oriented websites where they're just, excoriating him for that. But people can get more information about you and your ministry and your books at AmericanMinute.com. Thanks so much for being with us, Bill Federer. All the best.
Thank you, Jerry.
God bless. Bye-bye.